Hi, and welcome to How to Turn More Follow-Up Calls into Sales. I'm Art Subcheck. Have you ever had a prospecting call that you felt went okay? You sent out an email or some literature, but then on the follow-up, the prospect suffered a case of amnesia, barely remembering who you were, let alone being interested in what you had to offer. Or how about that gut-nodding feeling of staring at your prospect notes from a previous call as you prepare for the next one, racking your brain for, but not finding, what you're going to say on this call that's more inspiring than, well, I'm just calling you back to see if you looked at my information? Or how about not even being able to get a response from someone that you have in your follow-up files despite repeated calls, voicemails, and emails? Well, most of us have been in those situations, and obviously they're not healthy as it relates to our sales success. In this audio seminar, we're going to cover follow-up, and as you'll hear, that means ensuring we have a good prospect to follow up with, we have a good reason to follow up, the prospect or customer is engaged and committed to moving the sales process forward, and that we know exactly what to say and do on the follow-up call to maximize our success. I'm going to present lots of my own ideas and tips, and I've interviewed several other experts on sales in general and telesales specifically who will be sharing their thoughts. All right, let's get started. I always like to start any type of training session or learning module on a particular topic with mistakes that commonly are committed and should be avoided in order for us to maximize our percentage chances for success. So I decided to look at what causes people to fail in their own follow-ups. And to do that, I consulted with a sales training expert and specifically inside sales expert, Jeff Alexander, who shared with us some points of follow-up failure.
Okay. Well, Art, you know, you'd been talking about points of follow-up failure, and you know, we've trained and coached thousands of people, and there are six points of follow-up failure that I see more or less constantly. So what I want to do is describe what those are briefly, and then take 2 or 3 seconds to talk about them in a little bit more detail. But the six we see most commonly, the first one is failure to wrap up the initial conversation with action items for your next call and gaining agreement from the prospect as to what they are. And that's real common, probably more common than the other five. But the second one would be failure to call back in a timely fashion. The third one, failing to have an exciting, compelling reason for your next call. The fourth one is failing to log conversational results and scheduled callbacks into your CRM system. The fifth one we see most frequently is failure to use creative contact techniques when your prospect hasn't returned your call. And then finally, the sixth one, not checking in at least once a quarter with a good prospect, but a prospect that has no current opportunity. So let's talk about these one by one, Art, and take a couple seconds to flesh them out a little bit. The first one, again, is failure to wrap up the initial conversation with action items for your next call and gaining agreement from the prospect as to what those action items are and when you'll call back. Because at the end of that initial conversation, you know exactly whether your contact is a valid prospect or not according to your qualification criteria. You're going to have some action items if this person is a prospect. Discuss them with the prospect as you end the call, gain agreement as to when you're going to call back and for what reason you're going to call back, so both you and the prospect are aligned with what the action items are for your next call. The second follow-up point of failure that we see is failure to call back in a timely fashion. Now, timely fashion depends on the urgency of the sales situation, but if you've got a live opportunity, you should be calling back at least once a week to discuss progress and action items and keep your name in front of the prospect. Point of failure number three, failure to have an exciting, compelling reason for your next call. You know, you should always make the prospect happy that you called, have a valid new response to one of his or her concerns, a new solution offering that will improve your prospect's life, or maybe even discuss some good news about your prospect's company that might positively impact your sales situation. This might even be something that you saw on the prospect's website that you can make a comment on, or something you saw in the newspaper about some good news regarding his or her company. Failure point number four, failure to log conversational results and scheduled callbacks in your contact relationship management or CRM system. You know, most of us make dozens of telephone calls a day. We can't remember everything about the conversation, particularly after 2 or 3 other conversations occur. So it's really important to log important data points in the CRM right after the call is finished. Not only for you, so that you can remember what you talked about, But if you use pre-sales tech support people or sales engineers, they'll have access to your CRM as well. And if they need to call the prospect for any technical reason, they'll have the information you logged in. It'll make the call easier for them and help them to help you sell to the prospect. Failure point number five is failure to use creative contact techniques when your prospect hasn't returned your call. And this happens a lot of the time, even when you have a proposal in front of a prospect. Why isn't the prospect returning your call? Might be that he or she really is busy or feels he or she doesn't have anything valid to tell you. Your name comes up on the caller ID system. The person elects not to take the call. So here are three things you can do to have a conversation with that prospect. First of all, you can hide your caller ID. On my telephone, I use *67. That works on most telephones in the United States. What that does is that hides your caller ID. That means the person on the other end of the line doesn't know who's calling. Another thing you can do is listen to his or her outgoing voicemail message all the way through to see if he or she lists an alternative contact. Many times he or she will. Then you can call that alternative contact and say, you know, I'm trying to reach my prospect. Is he or she in the office right now? And even if he or she isn't, maybe the alternative contact is also engaged in the sales process that your prospect is involved in. And then you can ask that person questions and meet that person as well. And finally, you can always hit £0. When you get your prospect's outgoing voicemail message, ask the receptionist to put you through to somebody else in the department who can track down your prospect. In my experience, prospects are never angry when you do this if there's a valid reason for you to talk to them. That goes all the way back up to the top of the list we just talked about, which is have a valid reason. And if you've got a proposal in front of that person, you have a valid reason. Finally, the very last point of failure in following up is not checking in at least once a quarter with a good prospect. No current opportunity people. We talk to these people every day. They're part of, in many cases, huge enterprises who we'd love to be our customers, but they've got valid reasons today why they can't be customers. It's all too easy to let these people slip under the rug and not call them again. What you want to do is you want to use your scheduler and your CRM, put these people in the tickler file. I call these kind of people at least once every 90 days to make sure my name's in front of them. They remember who I am, so when there is an opportunity, we can make something happen. So, Art, I would say, of all the people I've trained and coached, those are the six most common points of failure that I see.
Thanks, Jeff. I certainly agree with all of those. As we go through this program, you'll hear several of the key points repeated, reinforced, and reemphasized by our experts as well as myself. That's because they work. And we'll be expanding more on those specific ways to avoid those mistakes that Jeff mentioned as we move forward. And speaking of that, I spoke with another longtime columnist in my newsletter, Jim Demansky, and Jim shared with me 8 very specific meaty tips for success on your follow-up calls. For this, I suggest you have a pen and a paper out, and hey, hit your pause button if you need to so you don't miss any of these.
Well, Art, I typically recommend a little bit of overkill, if you like. I'd rather have a rep do a follow-up and do it thoroughly than go to the other extent and not do it well enough. And to that end, I've got 8 tips on how to make a more perfect follow-up call. The first tip, of course, is to get commitment on the follow-up. And I think this is what reps don't do. They typically end up saying, let me give you a call next week, or I'll fax that over to you and I'll call you a little bit later. And what they should be doing is saying something more specific, like, I'll send that proposal over to you, Art, and what I'd like to recommend is we set up tomorrow morning at 8:15 to review it in detail and determine the next steps, if any. By getting the client to commit to a date and a time and a specific action, you are going to increase the odds of that client being there. In fact, roughly 70% of the time, clients are there for that meeting. So that helps get rid of tire kickers, and it keeps momentum in the sale. Now, the second step, and you can't always do this, but you want to build equity and be remembered. One of the neat things you can do if your follow-up is a little bit later on, perhaps a week or so after your initial call, is to send a thank you card. Handwrite that thank you card, make the message simple with something like, Art, it was a pleasure speaking to you, looking forward to talking to you a little bit later on this week or on Tuesday or whatever it is. You can also email a thank you, but I find an email gets easily lost and ignored, whereas a handwritten thank you card with a stamp helps you stand out from the crowd. So it's a nice gesture. You can't always do it, but when you can, use it, because it really sets you up for a better follow-up call. Tip number three is to send an email reminder and an agenda the day before your meeting. So if we are to have a follow-up call on Thursday, on the Wednesday, I would be sending you an email. And it might say something like, John, just to confirm our appointment on Wednesday, July 27th, we have our conference call. It should only take about 10 minutes, and we'll review the proposal. I'll answer any questions that you might have, and we'll determine the next steps, if any. That way, the client is reminded of the meeting, of what's going to happen, and it's important that you put the time in there so that it doesn't detract them. If it seems short, they'll likely be there for the call. Tip number four, add a value-added PS. Now, a PS, like in letters, like in emails, always gets read. And this is a great time if you can add a value-added article, something relevant to what you're talking about. I'm not talking about propaganda that your company has on a product or service, but perhaps an article that relates to something in the industry. And you can put that in there. P.S. Art, I thought you might like this article regarding something or another. Maybe we had talked about golf. Maybe you could put that in there. What that does for you is it gets you remembered. People read the P.S., they look at it, and even if they don't read the article itself, it creates a little bit of equity in you and creates a little bit of reciprocity, the need to kind of repay you back by being there on time for the appointment on the following day. Tip number five, kind of a no-brainer, but call on time. Oddly enough, today, Art, you and I had a call, and I wasn't there on time, and that was my fault. So don't do what I say, do what I preach. The fact of the matter, it does happen. But when it does happen, be prepared for consequences. The big consequence is that if you're not calling on time, maybe that's a reflection of your services that you're going to be offering, or your delivery times, or what have you. Tip number six, avoid opening statement blunders that most sales reps make. And quite frankly, Art, I've taken this from your stuff, and it's good stuff, because I hear it every day. Typical reps will call up and say things like, I was just calling to follow up on that proposal. I'm calling to see if you had any questions. I just wanted to see if you got that email. Is it okay? And the problem with opening statements like that is that they do not create any value for the listener. They don't remind the listener of why you had that meeting in the first place. And that is tip number seven. Tip number seven is build an opening statement that I say gets through the clutter. So, for example, you may want to say, Art, it's Jim Dabanski calling from Teleconcepts Consulting. The reason for my call is, of course, to follow up on our discussion that we had where you indicated you were having some challenges in training and getting your reps as productive as you'd like. As per my email, here's what I'd like to propose as an agenda. In that example, I reminded Art about the pain that he had experienced, the training, and his reps weren't as productive. In effect, we want them to go, oh, yeah, yeah, that's why I agreed to this call. Oh, yeah, 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 that's why I should be paying attention. These are little things, but put together, you create a big thing. The eighth tip is this: be persistent, be polite, and be professional, but don't be a pest. So, for example, if you call and the person is not there, the trick at that point is to leave a message so that that person knows you called on time. And it's a very simple message. Hey, Art, it's Jim Dabanski. I'm just calling for our 8:45 appointment. Sounds like you might be tied up for a few moments. I'll give you a call in 10 minutes if I haven't heard from you. But in the meantime, my number is. So Art will hear that message. If he's a little bit late, he can call. If he's tied up somewhere else and he hears the message, at least he will know that you kept your word. Now, call in 10 minutes. And if Art still isn't there, leave another message. Hey, Art, it's Jim calling from Teleconcepts, following up on our 8:45 appointment. Looks like you're still tied up. Please give me a call when you're free at, and here's my number. Otherwise, I'll call you later on this morning or this afternoon. Now, a good rule of thumb at this point is do not call again right away because you will look like you're stalking. The trick is to leave it about 4 hours or so, half a day. That gives the person plenty of time to call you back. At that point, you can call. And if you run into voicemail again, leave a message that goes something like this. Hey, Art, it's Jim Domansky. I've called a couple of times, but as of yet, we haven't been able to connect. When we last spoke, you were concerned about some issues in training and how your reps were not as productive as they might be. So I'm sure you don't want to let that go by, so give me a call when you have the opportunity, and we'll set up another time. Note that in that message, I went back to Art's pain, and note that I said, I called a couple of times, kind of getting a message that I called and I didn't get a call back, but I've given some grace by saying, but as yet we haven't been able to connect. The implication is that Art may have called me and I missed it. So it's easier for him to call back and feel less sheepish. So there you have it. There are 8 tips that you can use to help make that follow-up call all the more effective.
Thanks, Jim. Great tips as always. As I mentioned, Jim's been writing for our newsletter for a number of years, and at his site, he has tons of great ideas, tips, and articles. So I encourage you to go there. That is teleconceptsconsulting.com. Again, tele, T-E-L-E, conceptsconsulting.com. All right, I'm going to expand on a number of the points that Jeff and Jim had just made regarding follow-up calls. I have one undeniable rule regarding follow-ups, and it's this. The success of your follow-up call is directly proportionate to how well you conducted and ended your previous contact. Ending a call with, okay, I'll send you out some literature and give you a call back in a couple weeks, virtually ensures your demise on the next contact. And rightfully so. There's nothing specific here. There's no connection between this call and the next one. There's no summarization of the problem or the need or the interest, if there's any interest at all, by the way, and no confirmation of who's to do what next. Now, granted, some of these prospects that maybe you can't get in contact might have genuine interest in what you sell. But I find that many sales reps waste a lot of time chasing shadows. Prospects who keep telling you to call back, but don't have any intention of ever buying from you. So to avoid this futile exercise and to separate the buyers from the time wasters and to ensure that you have a great reason to call back, you really need to answer in very clear terms these 3 questions. Here we go. Number 1. Why is a follow-up call necessary? Number 2, what do you need to do between now and the next call? And number 3, what will the prospect or customer do between now and the next call? Only if you are able to answer these will you have the maximum chance for success on the next call. You can't end a call by rushing off the phone as soon as possible by blurting something out like, well, let me send you out some stuff and I'll get back in touch. And then expect them to be so excited over it that they're going to call you with an order. Normally, it results in the sales rep scratching his head before the follow-up call, just confused because he's coming up empty when he's trying to think of something more brilliant to say on the follow-up than, well, I sent you out the stuff. Did you get it or what'd you think? Hey, even if they are interested, most people are not going to think about you any further until the next call, unless you give them a reason to take action. So what we're going to do right now is go over how you can get them to take action and how you can answer these 3 questions that I mentioned earlier, paving the way for a solid follow-up call. Here we go. Number 1, why is a follow-up call necessary? Why are you calling back? Well, too many sales reps commit to call someone back, but they aren't sure why. Now, here I'm primarily talking about calls to prospects, since you're probably calling your customers on a regular basis anyway. A follow-up call to a prospect should only occur when you've thoroughly qualified the person you're speaking with as having the interest, the need, the authority, and the money to buy. Then you should know in very specific terms why a follow-up contact is required. Exactly what action needs to be taken before a sale can be closed. For example, in some types of industries or with certain products and certain type of call strategies, the sales process is stretched out over several or multiple contacts. Maybe the first call might be to qualify, generate interest, and get out some material or set up a demo. The second would be a fact-finding mission to gather enough information for a proposal or a quote, and so on. However, other salespeople operate on a one or two call close system, and it's in these cases where the sales rep should know why they're calling back if a sale isn't accomplished on the first or second contact. Perhaps upper level management needs to sign off on such a purchase, or the prospect truly does need to talk it over with someone. Whatever the case, be sure you know exactly why that decision can't be made today, and be sure it is a real reason. Some prospects keep salespeople twisting in the wind, teasing them with a decision that never may occur. Number two, what are you going to do? This question needs to be answered, and that is, what do you need to do between now and the next call? So this could involve sending something out, emailing something, checking on a price quote, researching for competitive information. Again, what are you doing? The point here is, let the prospect know what you're going to be doing for them, and then, of course, you're going to do it. Step number three, assign some homework here. Finally, to get the prospect involved, you need to assign something that they're going to do and get a commitment. If they are truly interested, and they are because you're calling them back, right? You need to get their agreement as to what they'll do between now and the next call. For example, if they're going to talk it over with somebody else, we'll need to find out specifically when they're going to be meeting with them. Get their commitment that they're going to recommend your products or your service or your proposal in a meeting. This is critical, since if they won't agree to do something before the next contact, it's a sign that they really don't see enough value in taking action. So some specific questions might be, are you going to recommend to your committee that this is what you're going to do? What's going to happen on your end after you receive the sample? What's going to happen between now and our next call? If they're going to study your literature, your PDF file, or go through your demo, point out particular areas in advance that they're going to be interested in based on your questioning, and then get their commitment that they're going to do it. For example, okay, John, to review, before our next conversation, I'm going to send over to you the comparison report, which you're going to have by this afternoon, and I'll highlight the page number that you should study to get the figures that you need. And on Monday, you're going to be meeting with your boss and presenting my proposal with your recommendation at that time. Is that right? Great. What other information might I be able to provide which would help you sell it in the meeting? The call ending is so critical to your follow-up success. I want to further break down the components here. Here's what you should cover at the end of your call to ensure a nice transition from this contact to the next. And by the way, this assumes that you didn't get a sale, and we're all pretty good at wrapping up that type of call, right? All right, so here's what we need to summarize. Their need or their problem and their interest. You need to revisit what they were interested in and why. And again, this also presumes that you had done a great job of questioning to uncover all of that on this call. That's absolutely critical. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. Also next, what they're going to do. At the very minimum, again, you should get commitment that they're going to read something, they're going to prepare some questions, they're going to, again, go through the demo or the sample, evaluate it according to the criteria you both discussed. They're going to go to the committee with recommending your proposal. Again, this is critical. If you don't get a commitment for action, this person might not ever become a customer and you'll be chasing them forever. Asking for and getting some type of action commitment is my way of tightly qualifying people Again, if they're not taking action, why are you calling back? And again, review what you're going to do, what you're going to send, who you're going to speak with, or whatever else you promised. And finally, you need to agree on when you're going to talk next. And don't say, hey, how about I give you a call in a couple weeks? Let them give you a date. And here's a great tip for you. Tie it to their commitment like this. So, Pat, by when do you think you'll have collected all of that inventory information that we're going to need for our next conversation? Or when are you going to be meeting with your committee and presenting the proposal? So now, not only do you have a date and a time, but you also have their commitment. The commitment, again, that they're going to perform their duties. And then finally, you need to go through the next call agenda. Go over what's going to happen next. This plants a seed as to what they should expect on the following call. So here's another example of a call summary. So let me go through what we've covered today. So you feel that we will provide you with better availability and you like our customer service policies and you do want to get going with that new inventory program that we offer, but you need to wait to get funding in the next budget, which you're going to suggest in your next budget meeting, which is going to happen on Tuesday, so that we'll plan on talking again next Friday when I call you. Does that all sound right? Great. I also spoke with sales trainer Colleen Francis of Engage Selling on this topic. She agreed with the points we've been presenting so far and shared some of her own ideas.
Art, one of the things that I find with telephone sales reps especially is that they don't do enough follow-up. And I was laughing with a client the other day saying, you know, more deals are lost because of lack of follow-up than are lost because of overly persistent follow-up. And so I am always concerned about sales reps losing business because they don't follow up enough. And I see far too often sales reps who say they made a call 6 months after the original call or 3 months after because that's what the customer said to do. And then when they call, they get a message from the customer that says something like, oh, you're just a week too late, or oh, you're just a month too late. And that is really heartbreaking after putting all of that work into qualifying that deal. So what I work with sales reps on is finding a way for them to have an effective follow-up call based on what they did on the last direct conversation with a client. And I believe that the quality of that follow-up call is 100% dependent on how they ended the last call, and I know you believe that to be true as well. So here's the technique that we teach. When you're on the phone with a client and the client says, follow up with me in 3 months, 6 months, 1 month, next quarter, whatever that is, say to the customer right away, thanks so much for being interested, or I'm happy to follow up with you, something that shows that you're going to take action. And then ask them, you know, one of a number of questions. You might say, what's happening next quarter that's going to make this opportunity more interesting for you? Or what's happening 6 months from now that is going to make you want to do business with us? So you can really find out what the situation is. And they might just say, hey, that's when our budgeting starts, or that's when our hiring freezes off, whatever information that is. And so then you're going to set an appointment. You'll say, great, I'm happy to call you in October, let's just say. And the customer will say, sounds good. And then say to them, how does the first week look for you? And they might say, yeah, it looks fine. And so just throw a date and a time out. Super, I will call you October 2nd at 10 a.m. Now, there's a really big chance that the customer won't put that date and time in their calendar, but it gives you a formalized follow-up and a really strong opening line when you call that customer back, because you can now say, hi Art, it's Colleen from Engage Selling, calling because when we spoke in July, we agreed to October 2nd at 10 a.m. for a call. Sorry I missed you. I will call you back Friday at 2. And you've got a really strong follow-up call. The weakest follow-up calls are the follow-up calls that lead with, hey, Art, it's Colleen from Engage Selling. Just calling to see if anything has changed.
Colleen and I also discussed how to know when to schedule the timing of your follow-up calls and not always going by what the prospect or customer suggests.
One of the other things about follow-up I think is important is not to take the client so literally. Many times sales reps make the mistake of believing that when a client says, call me back in 6 months, that you should call them back in 6 months and wait that 6 months. But for every month that goes by, you become less and less visible to the customer. So it's really important that you say to the client or ask permission to stay in touch with them before that 6 month or 3 month period. Anytime a client asks you to follow up with them outside of 30 days, you need to get into the habit of saying that you will do that and setting the appointment, as I said earlier, but also say to the customer, if something comes up in the meantime that I think would be a valuable or a value to you, can I send you, you know, an email or put that in the mail to you? Just so that you can get them in the habit of hearing from you more often than every 6 months or every 30 days, because they're hearing from your competition, and if the situation arises where they have to buy early and you're not top of mind, you're going to lose out on that business. So it's important to get into that habit. I think it's also really important to ask questions of your client whenever they ask you for specific dates and times, because you need to find out, for example, if you're selling a product to a client and they ask you to call you in 6 months, is that because the project is starting 6 months from now, or is that because they need to have the product implemented 6 months from now? Many clients don't sort of work backwards in their minds, and so you could speed up the sale by asking that question and say, oh, should I call you in 6 months because that's when you need to have the product implemented, or is that when the project is starting? If they say to you, well, that's when we need to have it implemented, now you can work backwards and say, oh, if you need to have it implemented, then perhaps we should start talking 4 months from now so that we can get you everything you need to get the purchase in place, the training done, and the product installed or the service implemented. So always make sure you ask, especially if the client gives you a longer-term date, 3 months, 5 months, 6 months, next year, if what the project plan is, so that you can maybe start calling back a little bit earlier as well.
All right, so what about the people that we have in our follow-up files who maybe we haven't spoken with in a while? Perhaps they were in an active sales process for a while, things cooled down for whatever reason, maybe it was our own fault. We haven't been in regular contact with them. So now the dilemma is that we're still holding on to these people. They're taking up space in our follow-up files. They're taking up our time, but we're not sure if they're worth our time or not. What do we do? Well, I consulted with sales expert and trainer Mark Hunter, who's also cleverly known as the Sales Hunter, and he suggests a technique to get a response, or at least to help you determine if you need to speak with them any longer.
Another technique I love to use is what I call the three-step shuffle. The three-step shuffle, or the three-step dance, is very simply, I've got somebody I've engaged with, I'm not quite sure where they're at. I'm going to do three levels of communication with them. And if I, after those three levels of communication with them, haven't received some sort of a meaningful response back from them, I move them over into my suspect list. They're really no longer a prospect. When I mean the three-step shuffle, I might A, call them, B, send them an email, 3, send them a written correspondence. Now, I'm going to send them three levels of communication using three different mediums. Now, the reason I'm using three different mediums is because I want the customer to see me at different levels, and not every medium hits every person. Now, what I say is I'm going to call them. Now, maybe I get their voicemail. Okay, fine. I'll go ahead and leave them a voicemail message, but I'm going to leave them a voicemail message that teaches them something. Maybe I'm going to shoot them an email. I'm going to shoot them an email, again, teaching them something. And maybe I'm going to send them a postcard. Maybe I'm going to send them a letter. Maybe I'm going to do some other medium. Maybe it is even a fax. Now, in each of these mediums, I'm also going to pose a question that's going to get them thinking. What I'm looking for is some sort of response back from them. If in those three follow-ups they cannot come back to me with some sort of a comment, some sort of feedback, some sort of response, then guess what? I probably am wasting my time engaging with them. And it's a very quick, easy way to begin separating those people that I want to spend time with and those that I don't, because for too many salespeople, they wind up spending time with dogs that really don't hunt, with dogs that really aren't going to get them anything.
Thanks, Mark. Those are some valuable ideas. By the way, Mark has a lot of great sales tips at his site, which is The Sales Hunter, T-H-E, saleshunter.com. Mark, you also mentioned to me something that you call the rule of 48, which is wise to follow regarding the timing of your follow-up call.
Let me share with you one more piece, and I call it the rule of 48. In fact, I used to call it the rule of 72. I've done a lot of work in the financial industry. Of course, we've all heard the rule of 72, and that means, you know, if you grow something at 10%, it will double every 7.2 years. And I used to say the rule of 72 says that you've got 48 hours to follow up with that customer. Oh, guess what, folks? With LinkedIn and Twitter and voicemail and email and everything else, 72 hours is way too long. You have 48 hours. You got 48 hours to follow up with that customer. That means they've got to see something in their hands, because if you can't follow up with that person within 48 hours, they've moved on to something else. You have completely fallen off of their, you've fallen off of their radar screen completely. And I'll tell you what, if you're going to get a response out of the customer, you're going to get it out of them in that first 48 hours, or you're not going to get it at all.
Now, some people might be thinking, wow, 48 hours, that's quick. Well, sales trainer and author Bill Lee has some surprising statistics that show you might even want to follow up more quickly.
Art, in most businesses I work with, prompt follow-up is an extremely critical point in optimizing sales opportunities, especially if you want to prevent a competitor from beating you to an order. Let me give you an example from my industry. I work a lot with construction supply people. When a home builder is ready to start building a new home, the builder will typically hand out sets of blueprints to several construction supply salespeople and ask for a quote on the materials necessary to complete the new home. Over the years, I've learned that it's critical to follow up with that builder within 24 hours with a comment like, "Do you have a couple of minutes for me to explain why I specified a particular product or a particular construction technique when I quoted this job?" Now, the reason I learned this is because we used to do surveys with all of our customers on what we called a quote-to-order ratio. And we learned that the average client of ours in the construction supply industry was only getting 20 to 25% of all of their quotes turned into orders. When we instituted this 24-hour follow-up, we were able to, in most cases, increase the quote-to-order ratio from low 20s to up in the low 60s. So the odds shift heavily in the salesperson's favor when he or she follows up within 24 hours of delivering an initial bid or quote.
Wow, some interesting statistics there, Bill. By the way, you can go to Bill's site and get lots of great sales information for both sales reps and managers. Bill's site is BillLeeOnline.com. That's Bill, B-I-L-L, Lee, L-E-E, online.com. Bill, you told me you have another tip about the importance of timely follow-up in another area.
Another time that I found it to be critical to follow up on a timely basis is when a salesperson receives a referral. You know, in my sales training programs, I tell salespeople that referrals are like gold, and they have to really treat them with a great deal of respect. The entire follow-up process can be enhanced if the salesperson will take just one extra step and ask the friend or customer to telephone the prospect and tell the prospect that he's given his name to a salesperson he respects. Then give the prospect the salesperson's name, and then ask the prospect to be sure and take the call when the salesperson telephones. Then when the salesperson gets the prospect on the line, the most effective words I've found to use are these: "Joe Smith asked me to give you a call, and I promised him that I would. Is now a good time for us to talk?" Now, assuming that you have a good conversation, that you followed up with a prospect, you've got the prospect on the line, it's absolutely critical to call that referral back, the person who gave you that referral. Give them feedback. Say, "I got him on the phone. I sincerely appreciate the referral, and I'll keep you informed as to our progress." The follow-up is essential if you want to keep referrals flowing from your friends and customers out there.
Right now, I want to reemphasize a point that's been made several times, and that is how to open up your follow-up call. and then what we should be doing on that call. So let's imagine that we've placed what we thought was a pretty good first call to a prospect. We qualified them, generated interest, identified a need, sent out some type of material, and now it's time to call back and move the process forward or close the sale. It should be pretty easy and require very little selling on your part, right? No, very wrong. Here's one very important point regarding follow-up calls, and everything else is going to revolve around this point. You need to do as much or more selling on the follow-up call and subsequent calls as you did on the initial call. A mistake that even the best salespeople make is that they assume the prospect's going to be ready to buy on the second call or the third call because the first ones went so well. And as a result, calls with opening statements similar to these result. Hi, Steve. Bill over at Ellen Industries. Have any questions on that information I sent? Or, hey, Kathy, Mark Smith calling you back. Did you get the literature I sent? Or, hey, it's Pat with over Anthony Equipment. I sent you our proposal. Just wondering what you thought about it. Well, of course, those opening statements are horrible since none of them state what is in it for the prospect and they marginally explain the reason for the call. Your opening statement on the follow-up call needs to be as strong as your opener on the initial call that you placed, assuming that it was strong. The reasoning is that although you may have a vivid recollection of what you discussed on the first call, they might not even remember you right away. They probably have spoken with 30 or 40 other salespeople since then, or maybe avoided that many since then. Therefore, in your follow-up call opening, you need to remind them that you spoke before. Even if you have a phone appointment and they are expecting your call, remind them of what you discussed so that you can quickly move into the call. So let me give you my four-step process for a follow-up call opening statement. Number one is identify yourself and your company. And unless you have very intimate relationship with them, I suggest first name and last name. Step number two is to remind them that you spoke before. I like to say something like, the reason for the call is to pick up on our last conversation. Or I'm following up on the last time we spoke a couple of months ago or a couple of weeks ago, whatever it was. I'm calling to continue our conversation of last week. And then step three really is just a continuation of that sentence, and that's mentioning their need or their interest and or the action they were taking. Now, again, we are trying to bring them back to where their mindset was on the previous call. They're not sitting there thinking about you or their need or their interest right at that point. Therefore, it's our job to help them revisit their interest. So you want to say something like, I'm calling to continue our conversation of last week where we had discussed, then you fill in the blank there, specifically what they were interested in and the benefit, and then also what they were going to do. And you were going to recommend to your director that he take a look at, okay, and again, you're filling in the blank there with their action. Step number four, very simply, we're going to give the purpose for this call. What I'd like to do is go through the information I sent you. If I caught you at a good time, I'd like to go through some additional information that I think you'll find useful. I'd like to go over the results of the discussion with your vice president. And then also here, let me add something. Bring something new to the table. And you might say, and I've got some additional information that I think you're going to find helpful. Or I've got some good news on some research that I had done for you. Let me give you an example of this. Hi, Joe. Art Subcheck here with Advantage Industries. Hey, reason for the call is I'm continuing your conversation of last Monday where we had discussed how you could increase your production capacity by 10% with no increase in cost. I'd like to go over three of the points I highlighted in the literature that I sent you, and I've got some additional information that I think you're really going to find helpful. So in that opening, the caller identified himself, gave the reason for the call, which was continue the conversation, reminded them of what they spoke about the first time, mentioned the benefit and referred to the material, and then also brought something new to the table. And by the way, notice that we don't say, hey, I sent you out some stuff. Did you get it? Assume that they received it. Beginning a call with the poor examples that I mentioned earlier, it's awkward and leaves the caller nowhere to go. So as mentioned earlier, an important point to remember about follow-up calls is that you need to continue selling. After all, if they were ready to buy, they would have called you, right? Too many sales reps make the mistake of calling back and then they hope that the prospect's going to say, okay, looks good, I'm ready to buy. Well, we know that is rarely the case. Many sales reps get stalled in their pursuit of sales because they're not targeting and communicating with decision makers at a high enough level. So for this segment, I interviewed Dan Hemke. Dan was a CEO heading up Humana Healthcare's Western region. Now in his own consulting and training firm, Hemke & Associates, he helps organizations and their people sell to the highest levels in the healthcare field. Dan, give us your perspective on the importance of follow-up in the sales process, especially at the higher levels.
Mark, I'm sure that you're familiar with getting the sales call where you can't get a word in edgewise. And I can tell you from both, you know, being at the executive level as well as making calls to C-suite folks, those are absolutely the least effective calls you can possibly make. I think what's most important in terms of understanding a follow-up call is that it really needs to be part of an overall strategy. And as much as we would like to kind of short-circuit the process, so to speak, that process really does include some very fundamental steps. And it starts with, you know, relationship. We need to do something to create connectivity with the people with whom we're dialoguing. The second thing is that we really need to go through a good discovery process. And that really is about learning everything we can about the people that we're trying to do business with, both in terms of their businesses, their organization, as well as the individuals who, you know, may be the key stakeholders in terms of our services. And then once we have that understanding, then we're at a point where, assuming that there is a good fit, we really have the opportunity to present a solution or advocate a solution or an approach. And, of course, as we all know, decisions take time, and you need to then, you know, support people through the decision process. The reason I mention this is because you really do need to be mindful of that process and those steps, because oftentimes calls are more about promoting your own concepts, and all too frequently we're in the process of advocating solutions with people that we don't have relationships with and to organizations that we don't adequately understand. So it's important that we start from that context.
I agree. Too many people suggest a follow-up when there's no basis for it and they have not done sufficient discovery, as you pointed out. And then they wonder why they can never get back in contact with their prospect. And usually it's because the prospect realized that there was nothing of value that the sales rep had to offer. And I'll be blunt here. Maybe they made the determination that the sales rep was not really equipped to sell at the prospect's level. So really, what I'm getting out of this, what you're saying, Dan, is that especially at this level, we need to have a great understanding of the prospect and ensure that we're paying attention to the early part of the sales process so that there can be a valid, meaningful follow-up. Tell us how the follow-up fits in.
The follow-up call really is part of your overall sales strategy. And that sales strategy is a continuous process. It's a continuous cycle. And it really starts with taking advantage of every opportunity you can to first validate your understanding. And that's important because oftentimes we kind of advance processes or advance discussions, sometimes with inaccurate information. So it is important to validate your information. The second thing is that it's really critical to make sure that we know what new information do we need or what additional information do we need in order to be able to really understand whether there's something that we have to offer of value to the people that we're, you know, trying to do business with. And only then is it appropriate to do some select messaging, which, again, is quite contrary to the way most of us do it, because most of us, again, are constantly pitching as opposed to, you know, really trying to understand the environment. So after you have this understanding, after you've validated, you know, your understanding, after you've gotten new information that's critical, then it's possible to do some select messaging, particularly if it's in the context of kind of connecting what you do with what's important to the client. And then, of course, once you've done that, the most critical thing is looking for an opportunity to secure a commitment from the client. I use the example oftentimes with folks that I work with is that every kind of selling situation is kind of like football. It's kind of like starting out in the 20-yard line. And if you have an opportunity to validate some understanding, if you have a chance to get new information, if you get a chance to, you know, communicate some select messages, kind of like a running play, but where you really have an opportunity to move the chains and get a first down, so to speak, is when you get a commitment from the client. That's where you really have an opportunity to start moving that ball downfield, and more importantly, really start to advance the relationship based upon, again, you know, some connectivity that you have with the people that you're doing business with, as well as connectivity with what's important to them. it's kind of funny. As you know, Art, I work with a lot of different clients and helping them in complex situational sales negotiations and that sort of thing. And I had a client recently, after a number of meetings, come back to the office and really express an incredible amount of frustration. In fact, was quite angry. And their comment was, I just don't understand why they don't get it. You know, we had I think there was a couple conference calls, and they maybe have demonstrated their product on the web or whatever. And this person was very frustrated and just continued to say, you know, I don't understand why they don't get it. And after the smoke cleared, we sat down and we talked a little bit about what had occurred. And I really challenged this person with regard to the fact that it's really not important that they get it. It's important that we get it in terms of understanding what's important to them. And it was, again, a really good example of, in that situation, I would say that this person not only didn't gain any yardage or certainly get a first down, but lost some yardage and, frankly, may have even lost the ball if you continue kind of using that football analogy. And, Art, I'm sure you've seen situations like that where people actually kind of fumble a material opportunity just by not spending enough time listening.
Dan, that's true regardless of whatever level you're selling at. So what suggestions do you have for moving the process forward effectively and setting up your follow-ups?
It's interesting. When you reflect upon, you know, what doesn't work for people or what are some of the key challenges or the things that make, you know, people fumble the ball, so to speak, more often than not, very honestly, it has to do with poor preparation and that you're really not setting up the call to begin with. And again, you know, using the football analogy, most often you're using different plays to set up a major play, maybe set up a passing play or set up a long yardage kind of situation. And the same is true with the follow-up call. It really needs to be set up from the beginning. And I think part of that setup really needs to include a couple of really critical elements that people need to think through. The first is that with whomever you're talking, whatever the company is, whoever the representative is, there has to be a compelling and valid reason for them to want to talk with you. And it's kind of the flip side of the coin, because all too frequently we make our follow-up calls based upon our reason to talk with them as opposed to a reason that they would want to talk with us. So I think it's important to really look through the lens of the prospective customer and make sure that, you know, we see that there's a valid reason for them to want to talk to us. I also think where possible, you should always be try to set up both your first call and potentially follow-up call at the C-suite level. What's really important there, of course, is trying to do it ideally with either the decision maker or someone that's going to be, you know, very influential in terms of the decision process. Obviously, one of the most effective ways to set up the call in terms of dealing again with either the C-suite or somebody that's not at the C-suite level is to take what you've learned in that first call and document it very carefully. And in setting up that call, you have an opportunity, frankly, to deliver on your first promise, which, of course, is incremental to building the relationship. And that first promise may go, and I'll give you an example. Oftentimes when I meet with people for the first time, whether by phone or in person, I will always take lots of notes. And in taking those notes, I might close the discussion by saying something like this. I might say, Art, you know, I really appreciate the time you spent today. I have learned a lot. As you can see, I've taken a lot of notes. It's really important to me that my understanding is accurate. What I would like to do is go back to the office, organize my notes, and with your permission, I'd like to send those back to you and schedule a call where we can kind of just review my understanding and make sure, in fact, that I have an accurate understanding of what we talked about today. Now, of course, that does several things. One is it demonstrates that I really care enough to take really good notes, and more importantly, I care enough to really understand. The second thing is that it gives me an opportunity. I'm actually cultivating or setting up that next call, and, of course, in addition to that, it's giving me an opportunity, as I mentioned, to deliver on my first promise by taking those notes, going back, organizing them carefully, and, of course, it's also a great way to demonstrate that you can generate a really good work product for your client that's thoughtful and well-organized. So it's a fabulous way in which to reconnect with the client overall. And, of course, if you've established a C-suite relationship, I mean, obviously it's a great way to really talk, you know, strategically as well as tactically, because you're talking to somebody that has accountability for both areas. if you are not dealing at the C-suite level. Again, I love the fact that if you can get in, if you can connect with the C-suite in your first call, and I can think about my own experience as a CEO, oftentimes people would call me, you know, would engage me maybe in an initial discussion or schedule a call for an initial discussion, and I might refer them to someone else in my organization that I would like them to talk to, or I may delegate it to another person. But the great thing about that is that once that connection has been made to the C-suite, you really have an opportunity then throughout your discussions with anyone else in the organization to keep that C-suite level contact informed of what's going on in your discussions. And in fact, I would argue that you even have an obligation to do so. So again, it's a great way to start building a variety of bridges into the organization. And the neat thing about it, of course, is, again, if you've established that C-suite relationship, you can nurture that, whether they're the principal person that you're dealing with at this at a particular point in time, or whether you're actually dealing with one of their subordinates.
Thanks, Dan. Great information from someone who has been on both sides of the sales desk at the highest level. All right. We've covered a number of mistakes to avoid and then specific ideas, tips, and strategies to move your sales process forward more quickly and how to successfully follow up with people who can and will buy from you. Follow these strategies and I'm confident you will turn more of your follow-up calls into sales. I'm Art Subchek.